Welcome to Friday, everyone. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Showcase studio along Michigan Avenue as we continue to enjoy August. Andrea Haines is in the studio. We'll talk to her. Of course, she's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation. Some stories coming up, including going back to get your MBA. When is too old to get an MBA? We'll talk to Andrea in just a second about that. But in the second half hour, I want to introduce you to Courtney McDermott. I saw her TED Talk not too long ago, a woman who said she was miserably successful, doing very well, and realized that it wasn't really working for her. So she's kind of out to change people, to de-stress people in the workplace. We'll talk to her a little bit later. Mary Beth Roberti as well, as I said, from the Roberti Community House in Waukegan. And then Tom Gimbel will be in the studio to talk about labor dates, not what it used to be, or at least the people who are in labor, the unions and things like that, might be changing the way they celebrate. But right now, Andrea Haines, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, you look like a person who's probably got your MBA.
I don't have my MBA.
Did you ever want to get an MBA?
You know, I haven't like felt that pull, although part of what interests me in the story is I do kind of feel I never got a master's degree, only have a bachelor's degree. So there are times when I feel like it would be nice to learn a few more things and synthesize some of the things you learn in your career into actual knowledge that you can articulate, which is a lot of what I think older MBA students are interested
in. I don't think we're overeducated, but sometimes I worried that we might be over-degreed.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Perhaps.
People are collecting degrees.
It's not a magic bullet, right? And that's what people are realizing.
A lot of teachers' payments, right? Their raises depend on getting another degree. I don't think that always makes them a better teacher.
Yeah.
So you guys wrote about people who go back as 40, 50, I think there's a guy in his late 60s, to get an MBA.
Yeah.
What's that about? Are they? What kind of benefits do they see from that?
Yeah, so typically you count the sort of return on investment by salary, right? How much is your salary going up times how many decades do you still have left to work? So for, you know, if you're in your 40s, certainly if you're in your 50s or 60s, that math is not necessarily going to make sense. Yet tons of people over 40 are getting MBAs. And we were honestly surprised at how many in some of these programs where half the people almost will be 40 or over.
What's the typical, the late 20s?
If you're going right after school, you know, it depends on the program, but I think the traditional full-time MBA, it does tend to be that, you know, in your 20s, you maybe have a little bit of work experience, but not as much. There's that profile for the full-time student. But then when you add in the part-time, the executive MBA, which is, you know, very prominent in Chicago with Northwestern and Booth.
Well, Booth, right behind us.
Right next door. Yeah. So there's a lot of students doing that at an older age and going to what they get out of it. It's funny because many of them will say it's kind of a bucket list item, maybe to just have that degree. I get the idea that maybe when you get out of school at 22, you're ready to be done with your education, go into the workforce, but then at some point you feel the need again to get some more
book learning. Kind of more about self-fulfillment than...
Yes, exactly. It's kind of self-fulfillment. I think it's, you know, some people express that idea of like, you have kind of learned things, maybe suddenly you're handling a budget, so you have to jump in and handle a little bit of a budget, but you don't have that holistic knowledge of it, and so you kind of like to go back and say, okay, here's what I've been doing. Here's what I've been doing correctly with budgeting, managing, all those things we do in business careers of any type, and then actually getting the learning.
So I will go back for an English degree.
You can freshen your network too, right? You can meet a lot of 30-year-olds, which might help you out later in your career.
It could. Okay, let's go to Keio. I love this story. It's a company that reads as if they're out of Wicker Park. And they've come up with technology or software where you can wave your palm over a palm scanner and pay for your coffee or your cake or clothing in some cases that way. The idea, right, is that that then takes away the transmission of your credit card information from store to store to store.
Exactly. So it's a shortcut to using your credit card. And it's the kind of thing that I always think, aren't we there yet? Can't we all scan our palms every place? But you really, there aren't that many options to do it yet. So they're actually working out of a downtown new fintech incubator called Currency. But a lot of their early clients have been Wicker Park, they have a couple little coffee shops and things where you can go in and scan with your hand. And they say the people that like that are the people that maybe work in the building where they come downstairs multiple times a day and they can just scan their hand.
My brother-in-law was in a few weeks ago and his health club, I might have said this on the air, but his health club went to Thumbprints for admission.
Yep.
He's adamant that he would never do that, that he didn't want to sort of give away that data. I mean, do you think they would run into that with people not wanting to give away their
phone? I think so. I mean, I think the idea of biometrics we're not entirely, you know, comfortable with yet. You think about hacking and, like, of course, any data can be hacked, right, including your palm read. So I think some people might be nervous about it. I mean, with that said, the credit card companies are actually giving this company a little bit of a better deal because they feel like overall there will be
the
less
security
fraud.
Will be better, right?
Yeah, with palm print than
okay. So, but how do they succeed? Because one of the vendors, I think it was a coffee shop, he said, "Yeah, we get about 10 people a day."
Yeah,
well, that's not much, right? But it can be a great idea. It can be fantastic for everyone. We didn't mention, but the shops pay a lower percentage than they would to credit card companies. But they need some sort of critical mass, I would think, to make them go.
Yeah, and like with all startups, you feel like somebody will do this. Will it necessarily be this company? Time will tell. They are involved in a Silicon Valley incubator, and you know they're a startup, so time will tell, I guess, how much traction they get. But it seems like they're looking for that exposure because they know they'll need to get that.
So the idea is that we're going to do this. It's just a matter of which. Elvis is going to be a big star. It's just a matter of which song
exactly, which one
the
gets
hit.
Him there.
All right, so we'll follow that. And well, every weekend or every week, Groupon is in the news.
I know Groupon does make a lot of news, I have to say. There was a little bad news for them, at least if you're an employee. This week, they laid off about 130 customer service representatives. And they didn't, you know, they're obviously based in Chicago. It was not clear that any or many of those jobs were in Chicago because they were remote workers. So we're unclear how that really affected us.
So what did they
here,
do? Do you know? Did they handle complaints?
Customer service type, you know, which it sounds like they're looking at a way to do customer service a little bit differently. So I think they obviously need that. It's something that they've stressed as being important. And obviously customer facing business, you know, in terms of people with deals, but also dealing with merchants. So it's like they have a lot of that work to do.
130 though, they've got 1800 workers, right? So
Chicago.
I'm going to get, just in Chicago. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's not like it's 7% of their workforce.
No.
All right. And Groupon otherwise doing okay?
Groupon seems to be, you know, they're in the middle of a turnaround plan as they're calling it. And it seems like they're getting some traction on that. So time will tell.
This turnaround plan, that's like a sports team rebuilding.
It kind of is.
Andrea Haynes, have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Steve.
Tom Gimbel is in the studio, the CEO of LaSalle Network. And last time we saw Tom Gimbel, he was on his way to his LaSalle-ness celebration.
And I survived.
And what was the big secret for everybody?
We started out at Cirque du Soleil. So
nice,
we took 250 people over to Cirque du Soleil.
Was I right about the contortionist?
It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, literally, you could hear people wincing.
Yeah.
And then we rented out part of the merchandise mart and did it overlooking the river. It was really cool.
And that was your way of celebrating the anniversary.
Yeah. What the speech that I give every year is, we wouldn't know each other if it weren't for this company. And we've got a lot of mutual friends, obviously, working together, and everybody really gets along, and we should celebrate that,
right.
The friendship that results from work.
Okay, so here we are coming up into the end of August, August 25th today. Labor Day is a week or two away.
Yep.
Still, we still have a couple of weeks.
September 5th, I think.
But, you know, Labor Day, when I used to mark the end of summer for everyone, and that's the way we thought of it. We didn't think about Labor Day as in celebrating the labor unions. And I got to mention, we can think less about the labor unions these days.
Yeah, very few people, originally from the labor unions, but it tends to be when you say labor, people think blue collar.
Right, sure.
But at the end of the day, we're all laborers, right? And it's the honor of the working, air quotes, working man. I don't mean that literally.
Right.
To realize what built this country and what we do every single day.
You think it's probably the least of all recognized holidays for its origin.
Yeah,
right?
I think of that.
Just
above Memorial Day from least recognized.
Yeah, but at least Memorial Day there are parades and we go to cemeteries and we think of that. Labor Day, I don't think people associate it at all.
No, I think, well, it really is probably the symbolic part of the entitlement generation. We deserve the day off.
Right.
We work the other 300 and whatever days a year.
So how is it that you would commemorate Labor Day?
I believe that and I send out an email to the company, say, hey, we've got this 3-day weekend, and it's because it's to really honor what my company does, right? We're in the employment business.
Good point.
And it all is based on the working man and woman of this country. And people want to talk about, you know, Europe this and Europe that and different schedules, and it's not the work aholic attitude that we have here. But
they're better off.
Well,
no, they are. I mean, I think they are.
Why do they all want to come here?
Well, they don't all want to come here.
Let me ask you a question.
They do. No. Let me finish. They do all want to come here for their 4-week vacation.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And then they
go
back
and
work.
Then they go back.
Yeah.
Or they go back and do something.
Right.
Right.
Well,
I mean, we are the economic engine that keeps the world going.
But there is that sort of, there is a balance, and I think that they tend to be.
We can't agree on everything.
Look at me.
I knew I liked you. We can't agree on everything.
No, but there was another point you were making there. Oh, I know what it was. So But the other thing is, I think we see ourselves less as workers now
yes.
than ever. Like you used to be a plumber or make cars or coffee mm-hmm. pots or whatever. Now we go from job to job, career to career. And I don't know if we identify ourselves as much with work as we used to.
Well, I agree with you 100%. It used to be, you know, since the beginning of time that there was you were an artist, right? Whether
sure.
you were a blacksmith or whatever, but you
yeah.
were an artist. That you took pride in doing that. And today it's, are my skills transferable? If I leave this industry, can I go to the next industry and make more money?
Right. After the blacksmith went away, you worked at GE for 30 years.
Correct.
And now you work at GE for 6 months. So it's a changing
world. Wow, are you on, you're on an anti-corporate America.
No. I'm not complaining at all. I'm just saying GE, it could be anywhere. But it's just we're transient now more. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so our
I think
identity
so.
Is less work-related.
Yeah, but I think that's going to change, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think that the whole 7 jobs and 3 careers mentality over your lifetime is going to change.
When?
I think it's going to change. My guess is we'll, you know, whether it starts
about
in,
the time I start job yeah. hopping because
well, whether it ends in two, whether this boom economy ends in 6 months or 3 years, right? And it's probably somewhere in between that. I think that then you'll have a rough patch like we had during the recession of 3 to 5 years. And then coming out of that, I think you're going to see a lot of people.
That's interesting. I have not heard people say
I
that.
I think it'll change. Because what ends up happening, my belief is, the more technologically advanced we get, the more the connection for community and that society
right,
we
right,
have.
Right.
And so as everybody's on their phone and if people are working from home and they think you want what you want, but you don't really know it until you have it.
Right.
And I think that as we get more separated through technology, that people actually embrace more of the community and what they get from companies. I think the gig economy is really kind of a joke. I think it's always been there, right? You've been getting somebody to come in and paint your house on the side for 50 years.
True,
right?
True.
Now you can just
guilty.
Do it on an app, so it's got a phrase, gig economy. This has been going on forever. I think it's really going to pull the loyalty back to the corporation that you're going to see a lot for, you know, starting in 2021, 2022.
Wow.
For a while.
Oh, look for that. Tom Gimbel, yeah. the CEO of LaSalle Network. Nice to see you
always
again.
Good to see you.
Au revoir, amigo. Thanks very much for tuning in. Okay, I have an old friend in the studio. Mary Beth Roberti is here. Mary Beth, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you.
Right? And we bring that mic a little closer. We're kind of weird old friends because you and I played volleyball in the same crowd in the 80s.
Back in the day when I was in shape.
And then separated for 20 years or more. And my wife Sharon comes home one day and she talks about this woman, Mary Beth. And lo and behold, it's you. You pop back into our lives.
I think I was your first babysitter as well.
Is that right? Yeah, maybe for Rob's wedding or something,
mm-hmm.
for a wedding.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've known you forever, but I only learned in the past few years that in the times we were separated, we talk a lot about startup businesses here, but not too much about startup charities. You created a startup charity, the Roberti Community House in Waukegan, right?
Yes.
Tell me what it does. Tell me about the Roberti House.
Really, the Roberti Community House is a gathering place for people. And we have a variety of programs that are offered free to the community. And these are programs that were set up based on what the community needs were or their interests.
So things like cooking classes, English classes, what do you do?
Yeah, we have cooking, English, we have an after-school program, we have sewing, we have a Junior Green Youth Farm program in the summer. We have a lot of community gardening programs.
And you've been at it you bought the house 10 years, 5 years, 7 years ago?
Actually, yes, I bought it in 2010, rehabbed it in 2011, and so opened the doors in October of 2011. So 5 years we're in.
Well, good
mm-hmm.
for you. And
thanks.
What drove you to create a charity?
Yeah, that's a great question, and often a question
well,
I get,
We've got
get asked.
Yes.
But I'm a social worker, and I've always been involved, you know, with my community. I was volunteering across the street at the soup kitchen, noticed that, and the food pantry, and there wasn't really a place that people gathered. The community seemed very fragmented, and so I was looking for different spots, and nothing really was appealing to me, and this house right across the street became available. It was in foreclosure, and I just
and you made the winning bid.
Well,
you didn't make the winning
bid. No, it was funny because I was definitely outbid, but I wrote a letter to the bank that the house was in foreclosure. And I said, I guarantee I'm going to do 100% to give back. I'm not doing this to make money. And they actually offered, they gave me the house.
They did, for the lower price.
Yes.
And then you had to rehab it. You've done that.
Yes.
And so for 5 years now, kids, predominantly Hispanic kids, right?
Adults and kids.
Right, right. But predominantly Hispanic population.
I'm Hispanic and African American.
Okay. Uh-huh. Have been coming in and out of there 4 or 5 days a week, and you've been building a community.
Right, right. And the thing that's really neat is when we first started, as you said, like Hispanic, it's most of the, initially, the kids were Hispanic coming in. And now African-American families and kids are coming in, but they would never really engage in activities together.
Really?
It was very separate. And now friendships and the kids are playing together. And
you just said that, and you had the biggest smile since I've seen you here today. What is it that brings you the joy from this?
Oh, gosh. Just really getting to know people. There's so much talent, and there's so much people's hearts are so great. And I get to be around wonderful people all the time. And everybody gives back there. That's the philosophy, is it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor or what you're, where you come from. Everybody has to contribute to life.
Do you know other people? Do you know the people who've done what you do? I mean, who just out of... You know, just saw a house, bought it, rehabbed it, and opened it? Are you one of a kind?
Oh, well, there's so many people that volunteer for me, so no, I'm not one of a kind. And I mean, you look at what, because the community house is actually volunteer run. And so there's so many people that give back.
All right, so one of the reasons you're here, though, and I talked to someone, a restaurant owner who's got a similar program in Rockford a few months ago. One of the reasons you're here, this is a business show, is you're opening up a culinary center.
Right,
you've
right.
built or you've created a second house. You bought a second house.
Right.
You're making a commercial kitchen there, right? You've done it?
Yes, it's it's Roberti Culinary Pathway. It's right down the street from our current...
Is this like Monopoly? Are you going to buy every house?
Absolutely.
So the idea is you bought the second building and you want to make it a training center for people to go into food service.
Right, the food industry. Uh-huh. There's definitely a need for qualified candidates. And there's definitely a need of people looking for work. And so you put the two together, and it's definitely going to be
a
win-win.
It's been easy? It's not been easy.
Oh, it's easy because, again, when you surround yourself around people that are energetic and want to help, that... then it's fun.
Okay, so where are we in this project? You've got the building.
We have the building. We're looking for funds,
okay.
For funding, because, again, we'd like to offer it to candidates. It's a 9-week training. We're working with an executive chef, so we have the curriculum already developed. We've identified several restaurants, hotels, people that need people in the culinary service.
So will the restaurants come in and do they partner with you, or do they?
We are looking for additional partners. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Because we want to train the people and they actually place them in the restaurants,
right,
or in hotels.
So the idea is, here you are in this part of Waukegan where people can use jobs. There are right. food service jobs wanting. And so you're trying to create the labor force for the labor need.
Right. And the thing that's really cool about this program is we are looking at giving the meals that we are preparing back to the community.
Tell me about that. I read that, and I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, 18,000 meals are going to be produced over a year. And so the meals, because they're going to do on time or in time, you know,
right,
training of... Yeah, of cooking and cutting and learning, sautéing, etc. But you need to put those meals somewhere. So we're not selling them, but we're giving them back to the community, back to the soup kitchen, back to the Roberti Community House, where I have after-school programs and serve 40 kids 2 days a week meals.
So you're creating a training center, but you're also creating a kitchen for the community in many ways.
Absolutely, yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what can people do, or if people want to... volunteer or help, right? Because you are I don't want to turn this into an infomercial, but you could always use the help, right?
Yes.
Well, how do people find you?
They can go on our website. We have actually two. It's the Roberti Community House is the house that was initially started. Mm-hmm. And the new center, the Culinary Pathway, Roberti Culinary Pathway, they can go on there as well.
But if they search Roberti Community House, R-O-B-E-R-T-I, then there's a link, I think, to the Culinary Institute, too.
Yes.
Very cool. Well, you're doing great work, and I've wanted to have you on for a couple of years now. So congratulations. Good luck.
Thank you for making me feel comfortable.
Yeah, and maybe steer a meal my way or something like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
All right. Nice to see you again.
Thank you.
So we're going to go to Italy, I think. Courtney McDermott is on a phone line. She has written a book called Change Starts With You. Courtney, welcome to Chicago and the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi. I am actually here in Chicago myself today. Oh. Yeah, I came over to the States a few weeks ago.
So wait, you're in Chicago and we dialed you on an Italian number?
Yeah, actually, it's the only cell phone I have with me right here now, yeah.
All right. Well, come on over to the studio. We'll wait. I'll play a Led Zeppelin tune, and we'll wait for you to come over.
I'm in the middle of. I've got just one interview. I've got another interview right after this. But,
yeah. No, I was just teasing.
Phone is probably best. Do you want me to call you back?
No, it's fine. I'm just giving you a hard time. It's all good. You know, I know you've got the book, and okay. I was reading some press from the book. I actually saw your TED Talk and was struck by that, too. So tell me, you said you told the story about you were flying to Europe, I think to Brussels, and all of a sudden realized that even though you were very successful in a business standpoint, you found yourself sort of miserable. Explain for me that epiphany.
So at that point in my life, I think I was in a moment where I'd been chasing all of these, what I call gold stars, and I'd caught quite a few of them. And I had, as I mentioned in the TED Talk and also in my book, this moment of quiet with myself and realizing that none of it was really what I wanted, you know, at a much deeper level. And I wouldn't have described it that way at that moment in my life, but I just felt profoundly unfulfilled. And I was not connected at all to what I really wanted or what my values were and what my vision was for myself. And so that was one of those cold shower moments where I just said, time out, you know, what's going on here? And that's part of when this journey started to where I am today.
I sort of like the idea because it takes some self-awareness because from the outside, if I were looking at you, I think we probably would have thought you were very happy, right? Rock bottom looks very different from the outside than it is sometimes from the inside.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that trips us all up, honestly, is we have all of these ideas that we get from all over. You know, I remember reading a statistic years ago that the average American is exposed to 3,000 advertisements per day, right? And they're, you know, all some version of you're not enough, right? You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not fit enough. You're not whatever. You're just not enough. And I think that we all end up sort of listening to a lot of that noise lots of times, and also ideas of solutions, you know, ways, things that we should be doing or could be doing. And it can really, I think, for a lot of us, it can take us on a journey of searching or just living out someone else's script. And right. I know at least that's how I felt at that point in my life that you referred to earlier.
Well, I mean, it's almost like you're chasing. You're always chasing and you're never going to land anywhere.
Right.
So you use
that striving feeling.
You use the term sustainability and you break it up as in sustain and then ability and say that that's the sort of thing that rather than worry, well, not that we shouldn't worry about what we're recycling or how much energy we're using or all of that. You make the argument that if people pause, have that maybe epiphany the way you did and sort of regenerate themselves, that then from within individual sustainability will exude external sustainability, right? Did I put that well?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that came from over a decade of working on the question of sustainability with some of the biggest corporations in the world. And As I mentioned in my talk, et cetera, is, you know, we were looking at all of these really important things for sure, but we kept looking outside, right? We were looking at the macro and all the problems. And as we know, right, you can't solve a problem by focusing on the problem, right? So if we're looking outside for our answers, it's already in my, I believe that's already an indication that we're going about it maybe in the wrong way, in the sense that if we're living lives that we feel are sustainable, you know, we're in a place of fulfillment and personal success, and success how you individually define it, then you are making the world a better place. You are contributing to the solution, right?
Are you arguing then that if we're all sort of more self-aware and more focused, or maybe centered is the word, on what makes us happy or sustainable, that in return will make the world a better place?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is my firm belief that when you are, the way I typically talk about it is almost like cells of a body, right? And what you see a lot of, almost like the comparative, like a one cell looking over at another cell and thinking, oh, you know, that cell's really got it made, you know, maybe I should try to do what that cell's doing, and they copy, like the crisis of comparison that you see a lot of the time, or they look at another cell and they think, oh, that cell's doing really well, you know, maybe I should call it quits, and they sort of give up. And the reason I like to talk about it in terms of cells is I think of us individually as like cells of a larger body, right? And even if you look at some of the planetary crises that we're facing today, they didn't just happen, right? They didn't just show up. And it's, I believe, in lots of ways, the result of these individual cells just not in a place of good health. It would almost be like a cell of the eye wanting to be a cell of the brain, right? And what happens is there's like disease and havoc in the body. And I think that is ultimately what we're seeing as, you know, a result of that, what we're seeing in terms of the crises that we're facing in environmentally, socially, et cetera, is having lost at an individual sort of level, lost our way.
All right. We just got 30 seconds left, though. Take all of that and bring it into the workplace. You talk to businesses, you counsel them. How do they take that sort of inner discovery and make it a better workplace or incorporate that in their business culture?
Well, I think first and foremost, you know, it's really understanding where you're at, you know, as a business or an individual. And that kind of, doing that kind of inventory, I think a lot of times people are thinking about where they want to go, and they're devising all of these strategies, right, to get them somewhere else than where they are right now. But I think the first step is really just understanding where you really truly are, you know, how your people even feel about coming into work every day, how if you're looking at this on an individual level for yourself, you know, how you feel about that, how you feel about how you're showing up in the different areas of your life, and really just taking a super simple but honest inventory of that so that you can understand where you're starting from, right? Like, because if I want to get to Chicago, but I don't know if I'm in New York or I'm in LA, right? It's the problem. So just figuring out where you truly are, and again, as I said, in the simplest way possible, which are the tools that I use are all very simple, and then yes, setting that vision to walk into essentially. But again, I'm not talking about a 5-year vision or some future for our soul or another thing that you have to fight and struggle towards, but rather your potential exists now. Right. And that is infinite, right? But you have to sort of take a time out in order to see that. So the way I work with businesses and also individuals is really getting them to that place of taking that time out so that they can get those two pieces clear so they can move forward and make the difference that they're here to make.
That's Courtney McDermott. The name of the book, Change Starts Within You. Courtney, thanks very much. It was great to talk to you.